There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
The Radio Book Club. Official ticketers past this point only.
Indeed we do, the Radio Book Club. And joining us this week is Penny McKenzie from the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. How are you doing, Penny?
I'm doing really well. I'm loving the studio. It's so calm today. It's not normally calm.
It's because Steph's not here.
That's right. I'm sure that is exactly why.
Yeah, nothing calm this week, is there? So what's going on? I mean, it's getting a lot closer, isn't it? The Emirates Airline Festival of Literature, all the preparations are going down now.
It must be so exciting. And they've got a wonderful lineup this year, so it's going to be grand.
Yeah, we had a meeting with Yvette the other day about, you know, who we want to talk to, and we just kept throwing names at her, and she was like, okay, I think you've got enough, and we're like, no, let's keep going. So yeah, it's a great lineup this year.
Yeah, there isn't anybody that you don't want to talk to, so it's kind of like, well, it doesn't really matter. Whoever we get is going to be great.
Yeah, we want to go out and about, do everything with everyone, hang out with everyone.
It's appropriate considering that it is the 10th anniversary.
Hmm. Yeah, it's amazing where those 10 years have gone. I mean, it was a tiny affair the first time around,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And I think I heard of it about it just through word of mouth. I'd only just arrived in Dubai, and somebody had mentioned, and I kind of thought that it was something that had already been going on for a while. I didn't realize it was the first one, which is a credit to the organization, because obviously it went off so well, you didn't realize it was the first time they'd done it. And just strength to strength every single year.
Yeah. Now, as you're here, Penny, of
yes.
course, this is the most difficult part of radio in the whole week, certainly on the ticket and probably on every other show as well, because the spotlight is shone on you to judge the word for the week. Do you know what this is all about?
I do, and I'm scared.
So just for anyone who doesn't know or listening for the first time, every week we're given a word which we're supposed to use, slip into our conversations, not let anyone know that we're using it, and we get marked up or down depending on how well we've used it. So this week the word was...
Chagrin.
That's right.
How do you pronounce it?
Well, I believe that's the way you say it.
Because the first time I said it was chagrin, wasn't it? And I got chastised for that.
Yeah, but do you know what? Here's a confession. I've never used the word spoken. I have written it. I have read it. But I've never actually used it. And I would have said chagrin as well. But it's chagrin. It's
yeah, I used
sound.
It. I did it the French way only because...
Go on.
That's how I was taught.
Let's hear it.
Chagrin.
Chagrin.
Oh.
Right then, well, pick your weapons. Let's do battle.
Misanthropic. Ignominy. Admonish. Rapacious. Incomprehensibilities. Word for the week.
Right then, so you know what you've got to do, Penny. You've got to choose how you thought the word was used best. And of course, it's bragging rights for a whole week for whoever wins it, isn't it?
It's yes. awful doing this, you know, because you both sit there looking at me. And when I decide one of you, the other one looks so mad usually. So, yeah, okay.
Yeah, no pressure.
No right. pressure at all.
In no particular order, I didn't put these particular clips in, but it is Mark who's first up to go. So here we go. Mark's rendition for the word for the week. We're chatting with the travel camel this afternoon. He just took us on a helicopter over the cliffs of Moher there. I don't know, but I might find that a bit chagrin. I'm a little bit scared of helicopters. Well,
yeah, no, and the French pronunciation of the word, I'm terribly impressed.
Very impressed with that one. So that was my offering. And here comes Shruti. Here we go.
I was there a couple of years ago, and much to my chagrin, it rained on the last day that I was there. And when I say rained, it poured cats and dogs.
Oh, you guys make it so yeah. difficult.
I mean, I must say that I don't think there's a great deal between them this week.
I think mine was a bit better.
I don't think there's much to choose, you know. It's nice not having Steph to battle with, you know, because she gets really, really upset if she loses.
And there's
she
a does. Lot of emotional blackmail because she just looks at you,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
daring
how
you.
How dare you let him win?
But I have to say, I must get points for telling Mark how to say the word. Like, I taught him to
yeah,
do that.
Yeah, no, I can't give you points for that, because if you'd been clever, you would have kept that to yourself.
No, I'm too
no,
nice.
No, it is a competition.
You should have said
it is a competition.
You should have said it's chagrin in a northern Lancashire accent. Anybody got any chagrin?
So we're going to tell you who it is.
Yeah, go yes. on, go for it.
Struthi, I think it's you.
Yay!
I'm sorry, Mark. I am so sorry.
Yay!
Well, I'll tell you, it's easier losing to Shruti than it is to Steph.
Why?
Yeah, because she gets so stroppy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when she, I mean, at least...
she's either stroppy or terribly happy.
She'd be running, doing laps of honour around the studio right now. Well done, Shruti.
I'm
kind of glad that you won it this week, but you're not going to win it next week because we've got a brand new word.
We have indeed. I thought that this word is quite an easy word, I think, but I think I like the sound of it. We're coming into the festive season. I think we need to have a really funky sounding word. So our word for this week is brouhaha.
Ooh.
What?
Yes.
Brouhaha.
Brouhaha.
Brouhaha. Sounds like an evil laughter.
And how do we spell that?
How do you spell it? Brouhaha.
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 And what does it mean?
What's the meaning of that? Mm.
Well, it means, it's a noun, and it's excited public interest, discussion, or the like, as the clamour attending to some sensational event, like a hullabaloo, that kind of thing.
Oh.
So it's an event involving excitement, confusion, turmoil, especially a broil over a minor or ridiculous cause.
So like a sale.
Or you could say like a storm in a teacup, if you want. If you want a phrase that will describe the word.
A storm in a teacup.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's not easy at all.
This is going to be a tricky one this week, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Brouhaha. I'm going to go with an exciting event, I think.
Yeah,
because is that what it means?
Yes, also be. So it's got the two. So you could say you were invited to the engagement party that the royal one that's just recently happened. You would, you know, that would be a bit of a brouhaha kind of thing. Or if you went out for dinner with someone and there was a fly in the soup and somebody made an absolute
brouhaha
issue of it, they'd be making a brouhaha.
Right, I've got you.
I've got it.
The Radio Book Club. Official ticketers past this point only.
Yeah, something we do each and every week, of course, is take a look at the books that we ought to be reading. Penny McKenzie is with us from the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
Ought to be reading.
Yeah, or should be reading.
I know that when I finish telling you about these books, you are going to rush out and
rush
get
out
them.
And grab them.
I know.
Got a little bit of book news first, though.
Yes, we do. And this is quite a special one. It's happening in India. And this businessman and former journalist has loaded a cart full of books, and he's walking around this village in a state in India called Andhra Pradesh, and he's doing this to get children to read more. And the idea behind using this cart was because in India, many times when you're selling vegetables, you put it all on the cart so people can see it, and then, you know, people pick what they want to eat. And he thinks that this will be a great idea to get kids to get interested in reading, and he's just donating the books.
Is he following a vegetable cart while he's doing it, or is he just doing it on his own, I wonder?
Just on his own.
I think it is such a stunning idea. Isn't it just delightful that he can do that? And he's doing it with donated books, isn't he?
Yeah.
So he's putting those books out and then going around, door to door, and then children can come along and choose a book. Do you know, getting books to children is really difficult, particularly in rural areas where there's a lot of poor people. But once you've put a book in a child's hand, they will look at it. They absolutely will. And you can help them, obviously, by reading to them. So if the parents are on board, then you've got a reader for life. And that gives, particularly children from poor areas, it gives them a foot up. It really does. Yeah. It just gives them that step that they need to go far in life.
But do we need this sort of idea? I mean, I would have thought if they go to school
Shall I tell you why?
Mm-hmm.
When you go to school, you are taught how to read. The kind of material that you get, and don't get me wrong, a lot of it is very engaging. The books that are available now in schools for reading, for learning how to read, are very interesting. But there is something about a story that has been written for pleasure that does not tick the boxes for education, if you like, which usually lands up being quite seditious in nature. Okay, so the children are the heroes, etc. Those unlock a whole different world for children. And I think it is really important that children have the opportunity to do both. And they do in schools, but there's never enough time at school to do the reading that you would really want to do. And for a child to unlock their imagination, they need to be able to go and be alone and get into something and discover a world. What happens from there is that they become creative outside. You know, then they then go on and become creative people, interested people, curious people.
I think he gets a thumbs up, doesn't he?
Yeah, from of course, radio definitely.
Yeah. Keep on rolling with that wagon full of books. And if you see it, I don't know, you might even want to give him a little donation as well. Right then, we're going to get into our radio book club proper right now and get started with a book for travel.
Oh, I got so excited about this one. So what I did was at this time of the year, I don't know if you know this, but at this time of the year, all the publications, major publications, the newspapers and the magazines start putting out their best of.
Yeah.
In everything. And of course, books is on that list. So I get really excited now because I see all the books that have come out in the year that maybe I haven't known about, and they're the best of. Everybody's decided that that's what they are. So I picked through and got a lot of these. So the travel book was on the Financial Times best book list for travel. It's called Icebreaker, which immediately got my interest because I love anything to do with snow and ice and the sort of very southern climes and very northern climes.
Yeah.
And it's a travel book, A Voyage Far North by Horatio Clare. What a wonderful name.
It is.
Sounds like an explorer.
It does sound like an explorer, but what he is a travel journalist. And the book came about because a friend of his was working at the Finnish Embassy in London and said to him, don't you want to write a book about a government icebreaker, because he had already written a book called Down the Seas in Ships a couple of years ago about traveling on a commercial freighter. And this was an honor in sort of highlighting the profile of the Finnish nation, because it's their 100th anniversary coming up on the 6th of December.
And here's author Horatio Clare. He's wishing Finland on their 100th Independence Day.
I'm recording this video for you because I've been asked to send you a greeting on the occasion of your 100th birthday, which is quite a thing, to greet an entire nation 100 years after independence. And the irony of this is that of all the people you'll ask to do this, I'm probably the one who knows Finland the least. I've spent less than 3 weeks there, but I have spent months reading about your country. And the 3 weeks I spent there were extremely intense. I travelled with icebreaker Otso in the Gulf of Bothnia, breaking ice in the winter of 2017. And it was an extraordinary experience, mostly because of the people I sailed with and because of the country I was fascinated by, yours.
That's Horatio Clare then, wishing Finland that 100th Independence Day greeting. He sounds like quite an adventurer.
Yeah, he's done quite a lot of traveling around the world, and I think it is his passion. The thing that I really liked about this book is that I like my travel books to have a little bit of history in them as well.
Yeah.
So he does cover a little bit of the history of Finland. So you get the fact that they became independent from Russia, and after that there was a civil war, so you get a little bit of that. You get a little bit about the importance that Finland played during the Second World War in the winter, because, I mean, that was a brutal war between 1939 and 1940 and was quite crucial in terms of the Russian front and what happened there. So he talks about that. He talks about how Nokia turned it into a really amazing sort of go-to place to be in terms of technology. Okay, not for very long, but I mean, you know, Finland is considered to be one of the most egalitarian, free, democratic nations in the world. So with this background, he then travels on this icebreaker. And they are quite reserved people, so he's trying to find out a little bit about them, traveling through the area, breaking up the ice. It's also, politically, it's quite an important area because it's sort of like between East and West and that whole sort of thing there. So there's a lot of nuances that take place. So the book, you would think, just being on a ship for 3 weeks, what could you possibly write about? You're in the middle of nowhere. But I think there are nuances about character and about humour and about people, which is what travel writing is all about, isn't it? It's about the experience of a shared shared experience with people that are in the nation that you're visiting.
Yeah, and it's about just the way he described how he got to know everything. And he said he's only been there for 3 weeks, but he's done months and months of research. And that just goes into showing that it was a well-planned trip. He obviously knew, obviously he knows what he's doing, but he knew what he wanted to do with it. And it just sounds like a great read.
It is a great read. And the fact that the Financial Times have put it on its list of, you know, sort of top books of the year means that it really, if you like reading anything to do with travel, then this is one that you should definitely read this year, possibly even a good Christmas present.
The Radio Book Club. Official ticketers past this point only.
Penny McKenzie is with us from the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature, and it's time to pick up our utensils as we're heading into the kitchen.
Yes, we've got a journey into the kitchen this afternoon with a book which, when I first saw it, I was on a book buy with some friends, and somebody picked it up and said, oh, I want this. I said, you haven't even opened it yet. How can you possibly say that you want this book? But the picture on the cover, of which I've given you a few picture illustrations, they are beautiful. I would actually frame some of the pictures in the book and put them up in my kitchen because they are just so stunning. So they wanted to buy the book based on that, but I'm quite fussy about cookbooks, so I wanted something a little bit more substantial. And what I found about it is that the principles here, it's not like a standard cooking book. What it is it's going back to basics and saying to you, what are the things, the essential things that you need in cooking? You need salt, we all know that. Fats, because it carries flavor. Acid, because it brings notes and pitches into a food. It sounds like an orchestra, doesn't it? And heat, and heat, you know, is what releases the flavor or holds it or whatever you need to do. And working on those principles, she gives you guidelines and hints and advice, as well as a whole bunch of recipes. But there are 100 recipes, which for a recipe book is not a lot, but there are 150 illustrations, all of which are brilliant for people who are maybe not confident in the kitchen, or who are new to cooking, or who just need to relearn things. Mm. Because once you've worked through these principles, you actually won't need a recipe. You'll be able to throw anything together. And a lot of the illustrations give you charts, which say, well, have you got this? Try it with this. Mix it with that. You know, it's really, it's a wonderful visual way of cooking.
Wow, sounds interesting. That's something I would like to buy. But here's the author, Samin Nosrat, explaining why this book is a great guide for getting into cooking.
It's the distillation of my cooking philosophy. The idea that if you can master just four basic elements in the kitchen, salt, fat, acid, and heat, you can use them to guide you in cooking anything and making anything delicious. Good cooking is good cooking wherever you go, and learning how to use salt, fat, acid, and heat will teach you how to navigate your way through the kitchen wherever you are.
So she's saying that we can pretty much throw anything together as long as we've got those four elements.
No, what she's saying is you can throw anything together when you know how those elements work.
Right.
And then it helps you make choices. But there's lots of little general bits of information. There were some delightful illustrations that show you, for example, let's take oil. Okay, let's take fats. Let's take the fats side of it. And then she's got countries around the world. And then what kind of fats those countries use in their cooking.
Oh, wow.
So it's a little bit of general knowledge as well. You know, so there's different countries that use olive oil, different ones that use butter, different ones that use different types of seed oils. And so just from an interest point of view, you get all these lovely visual things. And then vegetables, what do you do with the top of the vegetables? What grows above the ground? What do you do with what grows below the ground? Which ones do we use both for? Which parts of the world use both? Which parts of the world don't? All these sort of interesting little bits and pieces. And then, like, for example, the basics, how to make mayonnaise, but in a visual format. You know, so I'll give you, I'll read it for you, for example. It says here, to make a really good mayonnaise, first things first, measure out the right measurements. And then they say to you things like 2 eggs to 3/4 of a cup of oil. So you can always remember that if you're going to have 4 eggs, you've got to double it up. But it's all visual. It's a picture that you look at. And then they give you little helpful tips. If you're going to do a lot of whisking, dampen a cloth that you would use to dry your dishes, put your bowl in it so that it holds it securely, because you know how it goes flying around the counter.
Yeah.
All these little bits and pieces, and everything is beautifully, beautifully illustrated. What to do when something goes wrong. You know, when you start making your mayonnaise and it doesn't work. So they say, well, try this. Didn't work. Take a deep breath. Go back to the beginning. It's kind, and it's warm and cozy and enormously practical. And as somebody who is very, very, very fussy about cookery books, this one is a complete winner.
Sounds good. So that's Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat by Samin Nosrat. We're moving on to something for our younger listeners and a children's book.
Yes. Now, if you like fantasy fiction and science fiction, and you want to introduce this to your children, this is a brilliant book to start off with. It's for sort of young adults. The protagonist is, I think he's 15 years old, so you're looking at that kind of age.
Mm.
It's an epic space story. It's a gripping adventure. So we have real science involved in it and a lovely emotional story. It's been described as The Martian for teens, although to be honest with you, I would say if you're a fan of Neal Stephenson's Seven Eves, it's more about that. It's about a situation where people are living off of the planet. In this case, they're living on a moon base rather than a little bit further afield. And these children have never been to Earth.
Wow.
So there's an opportunity that arises for them to go and live on Earth and spend time on Earth. And there's a little bit of a conspiracy theory and who's hiding what. So there's a good thriller involved, but there's some solid science. And I think that in the world today where there's so much fake news, so much rubbish that's out there that you can pick up off the internet, if you can read a book that is fictional but has a lot of good, solid science information in it, it's something that you want to encourage your children to read, as well as having a really good narrative where your heroes are young people, which they can identify with, which to me is very important. You have that whole seditious little side of it. They're taking control. They have problems. They're solving them. So for me, that this is just a stunning book for children of that
age. What's the name and who's it by?
The book is called Satellite. It's by a writer called Nick Lake, who has himself, he's no slouch when it comes to writing. He has been shortlisted a couple of times for the Carnegie Medal, and he has won the prestigious Prince Award for his novel called The Darkness. So, you know, he's a solid writer. You can really rely on him for good works.
So it's okay for me to read it, right? Even though I'm not a young adult anymore.
Do you know what? Do you know, I've just recently read a book that is written for four-year-olds, and I absolutely loved it. And I think that if you don't read children's books, you're doing yourself a disservice. It will take you an hour, 20 minutes, 5 minutes, depending on the book and what age group it's aimed at. But that doesn't mean it's not a good book, and it doesn't mean that you can't enjoy it whatever age you are. And I think it's a real pity that if you, when you turn 12, you can't read something that was written for a six-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds good. That's Nick Lake then, and Satellite. Now, we've got a travelling book as well to squeeze in. Can you solve my problems?
Yes.
Of course you can.
I chose this book, again, because it was on the list, one of the lists of really good books to read for the year. But what I love about it is that it's logic problems and maths problems. And I don't remember if you can remember going back a few years. Mark, you probably better at this than some of us are. That there were those, you did get books that had problems in them. And we used to use them as a family when we were going on a long road trip, and my mother would then give us a riddle or something to kind of work out. And it kept us quiet for quite a long time. So I thought, well, this is actually a really good book to read while you're traveling. If you're on your own and you get bored, then you can dip in and out. And if you're with family or friends, it's a good thing to do while the hours are passing, and or you're waiting in an airport and you're all getting a little bit bored. I think this is a really great idea.
So here's the writer, Alex Bellos. He actually writes for the Guardian newspaper as well in the UK. And he's talking about the moment that he actually got into solving puzzles online.
Last April, there was one that said something like, a puzzle in Singapore causes a something or other. And I was like, what's this? And it turned out that a presenter of a local program in Singapore had seen a question that was in a Singapore maths exam and had put it on his Facebook page, and the local paper had picked it up because he was like a celebrity talking about maths. And I thought, man, that is quite a difficult question for a primary school Singapore kid. But actually, because we, you know, Singapore, they're always top of the tables, this thing of Singapore maths, they reinventing how to teach primary school maths. I thought, my God, they're so good, they can do this problem. It took me about 5 minutes to do. It's probably the shortest article I have ever written. It's quite easily the most successful thing I have ever written in like now 30 years of journalism, because within a few minutes, it was in the hundreds. By the hour, it was tens of thousands. By the end of the day, it was over a million. And by the end of the week, 5 million people had looked at this puzzle.
5 million people trying to solve his puzzle. Incredible.
And he did that as part of his Google Talks, and I listened to quite a bit of it. He's quite interesting. And then he actually said it was like the dress, you know, the if it was gold and or if it was blue.
Yeah, the blue and, or the gold, yeah. Or the white. Was it blue or white? I can't remember.
So he was like, this puzzle was like that for him. And he said that, you know, for him, this was the time when the dress was also out. So it was quite a good one for him to solve.
Are there various levels of difficulty?
I don't think that there's levels of difficulty. I think what's good about this, they are obviously some of them are really great for kids, some of them for adults. It also depends on your intrinsic ability to concentrate for any length of time. So a lot of them are quite short, but there's some that require a little bit more thinking. But one of the reviews that I read was by Simon Singh. And Simon Singh wrote the book Maths for the Simpsons and Thermo's Last Theorem. And he was kind of saying that this book is so good that if you start reading it, sort of, say you're at work and you start reading it, you're going to miss supper. You're not even get going anyway. It's just so gripping, because there's also the history behind all these little sort of stories, if you like. You know, a lot of them come from the 18th century, 17th century. They're really old, some of these puzzles. They're not all really up to the minute and new, although there is one that was actually used in The Simpsons where they talked about Homer wanting to cross a river, taking Maggie, poisonous capsules, and his dog with him. And that's like that's kind of a bit of a spin on one, which is usually the wolf and a goat and a bunch of cabbages, or sometimes they use a wolf and a goose and beans, or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And it's how do you get them all across?
Yeah.
So there's a bit of a spin on a more modern take that can be had. But those are great fun. And I hadn't heard that particular one for years and years. I thought, oh, yes, I remember that puzzle. How did I do, you know?
The Radio Book Club. Official ticketers past this point only.
Yes, indeed, with Penny McKenzie from the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature talking books. And Something to Travel Home is what you've brought in for us next.
Yes, I have. I thought we'd do an audiobook, so I thought we'd also do something that's a little bit autobiographical.
Mm-hmm.
Born a Crime, which is written by Trevor Noah, who I think most people will know from The Daily Show. I mean, he is a frequent visitor to Dubai. He's performed here on many occasions, and I think he should be coming again
to Abu Dhabi, I think.
That's right, quite soon. So I thought that would be quite nice to set everybody up for that. And he has narrated it as well. So that's really great. If it's an autobiography and the person who's narrating it has a good voice, and obviously as a presenter himself he does, it just makes it that much more special and really engaging, which it absolutely is. Now, if you're familiar with his stand-up routines, then a lot of the stories inside the book you will relate to, but he tells them not quite as funnily as he does in his stand-up routines. I'm not saying there's no humor. It is very funny, but it's also quite poignant and a little bit sad when you listen to him talking about how he grew up and the hardships that he had to go through simply because he was living in an apartheid country, and also the fact that his mother was not terribly well off and he struggled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and here is the stand-up comedian, and he's also a talk show host, and he's saying what inspired him to write this book.
I spent a lot of my time hidden from the authorities. You know, my grandmother hid me, my mother hid me. We had to hide our family, in essence. You know, I think one of the greatest gifts my parents gave me, though, was the fact that they didn't let me know why we were being hidden. So as a child, that was the only world I knew. Mm-hmm. I just knew that, you know, we were indoors a lot. I knew that my dad would walk on the other side of the road when we'd go outside. I knew that my mom would sometimes dress up like a maid, which I just thought was her style of dress at the time. Yeah. So I didn't know that we were being hidden from the authorities in the country that we were growing up in. I didn't know at the time that my very existence was against the law.
Very moving, isn't it? I think this is going to be an incredible book.
It is a very good book, and I think the audiobook will do well also, because not everybody has the time to actually sit down and read something like this, but it's enormously easy to listen to. I think everybody got very excited because Bill Gates reviewed it, and, you know, Bill Gates, generally when he reviews books, they do incredibly well. And he was just saying that the thing that Trevor uses is that he sees the world outside of most people's perspectives because of the fact that he grew up never really knowing quite exactly where he fitted in.
Yeah.
So that was really great. And he's good at making fun at himself and America and the rest of the world. And he can do it. And he shows that comedy is universal. And I think we'll probably find that when Steph comes back and she talks about the festival that she's just been to, she will discuss the fact that this universal humor exists.
Yeah.
All right, so that's Trevor Noah then, and the book To Travel Home. Very quickly, we're going to squeeze in a podcast to have a listen to.
Yes, now, all of you who are fans of Serial, and I know there's quite a few people out there
Me.
Who are fans of Serial, yeah. So this is following on from Serial. It's the same producers as Serial, This American Life, and this one is called S-Town. And I was torn about whether or not I should actually bring it up and put on, because it is not a light listen.
Mm.
It's very heavy. It touches on issues of depression, petty crime, Alzheimer's. It's very, very heavy. And it is in the same format. Well, the thing that's amazing about it is I think that with Serial and This American Life, a new kind of radio reporting has sort of come out of it. People are saying that it's another way of telling a story, but I think it's journalism. It's a very intrusive, voyeuristic method of telling a story. I highly recommend it, but it's not for the faint-hearted. S-Town.
Yeah, I have read. I'm sorry, I have heard a few episodes, and it is extremely gripping. I mean, the first episode starts with talking about watchmaking, and you're thinking, where is it going? And then he introduces murder. So, you know, it's amazing how they get into it. It's a great listen.
And you can't really say much about it because there are spoilers all the way through.
Exactly.
So
we'll leave it there. Penny McKenzie from the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature, thanks so much for being with us on the show.
A pleasure as always.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.